Hello, and welcome to Life Lab. I'm David Ponder.
And I'm Zach Schaefer.
We created a candid podcast for busy people. We get right to the point of our topics, and we keep them to 30 minutes or less.
We wanted to put our ideas out there, share it with people we love, and if it spreads, great.
Our show has no edits and no gimmicks.
Like it or don't, we initially started this project for ourselves, to record our thoughts for our kids, but our friends and family thought we should share it, so here you go. Hey, welcome back to Life Lab. This is Zach Schaefer.
And this is David Ponder.
And today we're talking about pride.
Pride.
What do you take pride in, faithful listeners? Everybody has pride in something.
Yeah, and that's interesting to ask what you take pride in. Because when I initially thought about pride, I thought about it as a personal attribute, right? Like what it can be mistaken with bad things like arrogance or good things like self-confidence. Thinking about it in that term, it's almost like an external thing, right? What do you take pride in externally?
Yeah, it could be for sure. But to me, I guess it's when I ask that, oftentimes I'm assuming that whatever you're taking pride in, you have a hand in helping bring whatever that is into existence, creating, producing, tweaking,
yep.
Something like that.
Yep. Would you and let's say so sort of like pride in an achievement, right?
Sure. I mean, or your kids, which is technically an achievement, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
But my deck I'm looking at, I take pride in that, even though I didn't build it or design it. I did some grunt work laboring for my cousin to help create it, and I take pride in having it.
Yep.
If that makes sense. I wanted to start here, though. So I believe when people hear that word in today's society, it has more of a negative on the connotation meter. It goes more negatively than it does positively. What do you think? Are you?
Yeah. No, I'm kind of neutral on that. I think, especially in our culture, probably a lot more than others in the world. It's probably celebrated. I mean, there is a fighting league called Pride. You know
fair,
what I mean?
Fair enough. I'll agree with that. I guess I'm looking at our political situation currently.
Mm-hmm,
a lot of people push back and think our president's too boastful. So maybe that's what was forming the background of my thought. But here's what I wanted to start with. So human pride, either way, we both agree that it can be positive or negative, correct?
Correct.
But think about this. What's a pride of lions? A pride of lions is a group of lions forming a social unit. It's a social unit to protect themselves. It's a survival mechanism. It's how they prolong their lives on this planet because they could go solo, but then they'd be like Scar from the movie Lion King. And they wouldn't survive very long.
Mm-hmm.
Humans, when it goes on the negative route, it is the tearing down of a social unit because you're placing yourself in this prideful tower that you create. And it separates you from other humans. It forms the longest distance between two people is usually pride.
Yeah, I love how – so just so everyone knows, the methodology that we generally use to prepare for these is to take – you know, obviously to think about our own experiences and our own lives and what we think about pride. And then also to try to do a little bit of reading on material to develop those experiences. And it just blows my mind how – the themes that we don't discuss it with each other before the episode.
Our notes.
Yeah. And the themes that we come up with just, man, they're always really similar. So what you're talking about, the way that I have it in my notes and organized it is the connection versus disconnection.
I did pros and cons.
Yeah. And I did it in three ways. Connection versus disconnection. Internal versus external, and authentic pride versus hubristic pride. And I saw those terms in a Psychology Today article, which is really good at breaking these two things down. So, yeah, I mean, if you look at it that way, then you can basically have good pride and bad pride.
Right.
And the good pride is more about self-confidence and comfort in yourself. Internally, And what, you know, they term the quote unquote bad pride is more of that egotistical type of pride. Pride in, when I went internal versus external, a lot of the external things, you know, they at least walk the tightrope on hubristic pride, pride in materials. Like there, I read some Buddhist stuff as well, you know, and it gets really close to attachment. And if everyone's familiar with Buddhism, being attached to things is a bad thing, according to Buddhists. And pride, and especially external pride, is that attachment. It's sort of a manifestation of it.
Yeah, with that, that's that hubristic arrogance, right? The hubris, the belief that I am so good, I am better than everyone else, I deserve more.
Yes, and look at my status. Look at me.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. The old Ferrari conversation, right?
To me, if you're motivated by applause or your name in a headline, and we all are to a degree, but other people are more so than others, that's probably not a very good, that's not the good pride that mm-hmm. Dave was talking about. That would be a negative pride. Einstein said something along the lines of, the more famous I get, the stupider I get, and that's a very common occurrence.
Hmm. Yeah, but that's someone who's, you know, very self-aware. A couple of the elements that they use between authentic pride and hubristic pride is, with hubristic pride, and to further that notion of connection versus disconnection, hubristic pride, they basically say it involves egotism and arrogance, and it basically breeds socially undesirable traits like being disagreeable, aggressive, and it's a result of having low or brittle self-esteem and being prone to shame and not wanting to make yourself vulnerable. Like the saying, too proud to admit he was wrong, right? Like that's you not wanting to be vulnerable because you're insecure about yourself. And then it promotes disconnection from others because you don't see others as equals, or you don't treat them as equals. And others then see themselves as either being judged by you, or they see you as aggressive and disagreeable. And so that disconnection then becomes, you know, it manifests itself. And like you said, a pride of lions. It's the opposite of that.
Yeah.
And what Einstein's talking about is, I think, authentic pride. And it's built on self-awareness and comfort of yourself in the situation that you're in now, and then allowing yourself to be vulnerable. That's a vulnerable statement that he said. The older I get, the dumber I get. You know what I mean?
No, he said the more famous I get.
The more famous I get, the stupider I get. Whatever.
Close, well, I had to enough. Swallow my pride because you jumped down my throat and disagreed with me. And so then I could have jumped in and with my – so I felt my pride in my stomach. I said the Einstein quote. Dave cut me off and said, no, that's different. And then I went on to explain and rationalize. So my pride, I could have – I felt it literally in my stomach. I could have jumped back in and began to rationalize. And we could have then jumped into an argument and gone back and forth, and it would have been fucking pointless. But I think this is important. Pride isn't just things or achievements. It's a lot of it is tied to argumentation and defending our ideas and our intellect and our status between peers.
When you go turn on a news channel, if you want to see the reaction that Zach described that he didn't have, go turn on any news channel. It's that all day long. And why do people – I don't understand why people like watching that. But I do want to delve into it a little bit more because – your analysis of what just happened there was completely different from my intention, and I didn't see it. Yeah, I didn't see it coming. Yeah.
And I knew you didn't. You weren't being malicious.
Yeah.
But again, and it didn't matter. I'm not hurt, but I felt it. I physically, in my stomach, I'm like, oh, this motherfucker, okay. I'm bringing something to the plate, and he's didn't even give me a chance to extrapolate the concept.
Well, I fully gave my concept. So let's go back to yours.
I want to go a different route if that's cool.
Sure.
I like the authentic pride, and to me, authentic pride or good pride comes from hard work, learning, and relishing the struggle. Being vulnerable to even go into the struggle.
Yes.
You know, and so I don't think you can even have, and I haven't thought this through completely, I'm sort of brainstorming out loud with Dave and any listeners, I don't know if you can have pride, whether it's on a physical, mental, or cognitive achievement, if you haven't had any kind of hard work, struggle, or learning involved.
Yeah, you're right. And there's something about being out of your comfort zone that breeds that. I think people with the bad pride, you know, hubristic pride, tend to try to stay in their comfort zone so that they can dominate others and situations. And then they stray away from the real struggle where they would actually have a hard time and grow.
Yeah.
And they don't grow.
In a nutshell, how would you define pride, right? Because you like to define things for our listeners. So what would be your definition?
My definition would have to be with I would define it in those two ways. I would define it as a spectrum of self, a spectrum of feeling on oneself that can range from insecurity and arrogance on the, you know, quote unquote hubristic side, to self-confidence and comfort in vulnerability and struggle on the authentic side.
I like that. I always try, I'm a very pragmatic person, so I try to apply Occam's razor whenever I'm doing any sort of teaching, and just the simplest explanation is usually a better explanation than a more complex one. Complexity is the enemy of leadership and of building great things between people. So for me, pride is simply happiness with your achievements, your qualities, your traits, or your stuff. But obviously, that can be problematic if you are too boastful with your happiness. So I like the phrase as pride exhibitionists. People that are too arrogant, they're just pride exhibitionists. They're flouting their happiness and their satisfaction and their success in people's faces, and it pisses people off.
Yes, they are. And they're doing the hubris thing. And I think that this is an example where the English language fails, because the word pride, all the elements that we're talking about, both good and bad, fit into that one word,
right?
Pride.
We need an anti-pride term.
Yeah.
Maybe there's one exists.
Or, yeah, we just need to break it into two, I think. Because if you think about all these religious texts and the way that it's been translated from them, pride is one of the seven deadly sins.
What are the other ones? You got pride, lust, envy,
sloth,
wrath,
gluttony.
Greed.
Gluttony.
Yeah. There we go. Look at that. Catholic education,
man.
Baby.
Yeah.
So why? Clearly, that's huge. They could have put all sorts of qualities and traits humans had in there. But pride made a list of seven things that religious scholars felt are some of the worst traits that we have as humanity. Like, that's saying a lot.
I know.
Whether people are into religion or not.
Yeah, and I wonder if you... It's so crazy because in this Psychology Today article, they talk about authentic pride as promoting agreeableness, conscientiousness, emotional stability. Those are the things that, if you think about religious deities, you would think they would all possess that good side of pride, not right? Putting others before you, being agreeable. That's a lot of the teachings of every front and center religious person, be it, you know, Muhammad or Jesus or the Buddha.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Kind of center around that. So it's interesting that I don't know. I kind of think it's a failure of translation, and I think it's a failure of English. But yeah.
Where do you do your pride exhibitionism? Because we have all got to do it somewhere in our lives.
My kids, no doubt. Right now, I'm really proud of my family, and I guess
that's a cop out answer.
My home. I guess my home as well. My home is another thing.
Okay, so there we go. Because you can go family and kids, and that's just like, oh, okay, there's nothing you can say.
Right.
Home.
Well, you could say something about family and kids, too.
You could.
And I think we should delve into that
later. Let's go home.
Okay.
Home, because you're working to pay for the home, to transform the home,
right,
to make the house a home.
We want to make it, what do we want to make it our own. That's the saying, right? So we're putting a lot of work into it. We just put new garage doors on it, and
we're getting
ready to paint the trim on the outside. And that it's because, you know what it is? It's because of a desire to be judged positively by others.
Yes.
And that is a really huge, in our society, that is one of the larger ways that people judge, I feel, you and your family. It's like, okay, what is your housing unit?
I call it the cave, right? I always talk about our caves. We just upgrade from a fucking hole in the mountain to a owning the mountain and making the whole mountain the house.
Right.
You know what I mean? So we're just cave upgraders, as all humans are in today's society. And I'm not saying I'm outside of that. I'm looking at my new sliding door that I'm very happy with. Yeah. You know, that how much extra happiness and joy has that brought, if I had to quantify it? Some.
Yeah.
Right? But it's not like it reminds me
it's
of this.
It's transformative.
Oh, it's changed my life. I've got the sliding door.
My new garage doors have just made my life better, I gotta say.
Here's what I'll say. I'm a big Larry David fan. I don't know. Have we even talked about him at all on Life Lab up to this point?
Not enough.
I don't know if we have.
Not
we
enough.
Should be.
Yeah.
So if you don't know who he is, he's the co-creator and main creative writing mind behind Seinfeld. He then is also the creator and star and producer of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is coming back October 1st for its 9th season. He's just hilarious. And he basically plays himself in the show. But there's a lot of instances that stick out, but I'm going to talk about one that really is about pride. Because he is a pretty humble guy. He's just considered kind of a jerk or an asshole because he likes his alone time and freedom, but he's so famous now he can't really have that anymore. But in this episode, he goes over to his buddy's house, his business manager's house, and his business manager's wife, they don't get along well. She's like, "Hey, Larry, let me give you the tour." And he's like, "Yeah, you know, I'm good." He's like, I get it. You know, there's bedrooms and bathrooms and big closets and, you know, big garage. He's like, I'm okay. And it pisses her off.
Oh, I love it.
But it's because she's wanting to show off. Look at our status.
Yes.
Has been upgraded. Look at how well we're doing.
Yes.
And he wouldn't engage in that connection. So she was offering the tour as we all – anyone that offers a house tour, it's out of pride.
Yes.
Pure pride. That's it. That's why we're doing that. But what is turning down a house tour? Where does that come from? Is that also pride? I don't think. I don't know. I think it's something different. I don't know. It's odd.
Yeah, I think it is a little bit. Because I think it's like an external display of I'm so comfortable in myself that I don't care about your house. And I'll never be envious of it. Or you know what I mean?
And
so
they would get offended because they're like, oh, you're not happy for my happiness. My new success. You're not happy for us?
Man, it gets really complicated there.
Yeah, it can.
You know, I feel as a quote-unquote, you know, trying to be a nice guy or a socially conscientious person, if someone offers me a tour, then I always graciously accept. And no matter what the internal feelings I'm feeling, right? Like if I'm feeling completely like, oh my God, this house is amazing. And these people have so much money apparently. And, you know, and I feel like insecure inside about it. I have to walk around and, you know, be smiling the whole time. Oh, this is beautiful, you guys. Yeah.
Right. And at the same time, nitpick. Find things like, oh, they don't have this. I've got,
in my head.
Got this. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
In my head.
Internally, we all do that.
Right. But vice versa as well, right? Like going over to someone's house it's much more modest and whatever. Doing the same thing, putting on the oh my God, I love this, and your space is so great, and you know, saying those like,
it's so homely.
Yeah.
It's cute. That's what we get a lot on our houses because we don't have giant home or anything. And
yeah.
Oh, it's just so what you guys have done with it. It's so good. And I just hate when people sugarcoat shit and just be like, yeah, I get it. We don't have a huge house. Why don't you just say that? But I'm not a tour guy because of that episode from Curb. I don't, if you want to see my house, I say, walk around. The space is yours. Check it out. It's a fucking house. I don't care.
It's so interesting because you have a clear, well, I mean, you've thought it through.
Thought it through.
And you've landed on where you feel about the situation.
My tour spectrum, I know where I'm at and I'm comfortable. But I'm like Dave. If I'm offered a tour, I will 100% take it graciously and not be a jerk.
Right.
And point out things that I truly do like about the home. But then internally, you know, probably to ease my own ego and pride, find flaws or things that I don't like
about
it.
Yeah, but it's not to say that we aren't working to improve each of our homes.
Oh,
you with the deck and 100%. The sliding glass door.
Absolutely.
You know, me with the things that we're doing to our home. Yeah. And I guess that makes a good analogy to ourselves, does it not?
I don't think ourselves, I honestly think the human condition, the constant sense of forward momentum and progress for people yes. that want to achieve or, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah. Speaking of Einstein quotes, saw a great one yesterday, not even as a part of this. It said, life is like a bicycle. To keep balance, one must remain in motion, moving forward. Yeah.
Nice.
I thought that was really good.
That's really good.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. The human condition.
Yeah, the human condition. It's all, and that's why I think humans have some, as a majority, again, we're so U.S.-centric here, and that's not even an apology. We just grew up in the Midwest, and that's who we are, and that's where we're at. I'm not an internationalist traveler. You know, I've traveled quite a bit. But when I talk about things, it's typically from a U.S.-centric perspective, for better or worse.
Yeah, me too. It's, you know, going back to the analogy of it being the human condition and of being proud of our homes, our caves. It's, I think the home, like I said in the very beginning, it's one of these, it's almost like a checkbox, like a social status checkbox or something, right? And not even a checkbox, let's say a dial, like a sliding dial. Like, where am I at? Remember the game, there was a like NBA Jam where each player had characteristics, height, speed, defense, all this stuff. I feel like that's what we look at ourselves sometimes, and house is one of those, you know, cave or whatever.
Yeah.
Car is probably another one.
Yeah. Definitely house, though. Yeah.
Intellect is probably one. What other people's opinion of our intellect.
Perception of intellect.
Yeah, of intellect. Achievements.
Money.
Money has got to be the pure number money. One. And we kind of like...
Vacationing. Look at Facebook, sure. how lavish experiences. We got to share our vacations.
Yeah, it's kind of moved from, and we've talked about this in the past, physical things that you own and to the whole, experience. Look at my experiences and these pictures that show how good my life is.
Right.
And I feel like we kind of try to build out those attributes to try and be as high as possible, at least to the way that others view us.
It's status.
Yeah, and house is one of those. It's kind of a crazy thing.
Well, what is it? It's... Okay, let's go through the cave progression for humanity in today's society. I'm born. I'm in a cage in my parents' room.
Mm-hmm.
What do we call the cage? A crib?
Crib.
Crib. Cage, crib. Cage. Once I get out of the cage, I'm in another cage in a room probably adjacent to them. So I get a bigger crib in a different room. Once I'm done with that, I get my own bed, my first single bed, but still in my first room.
Mm-hmm.
Then I might get a bigger bed or a bunk bed or a full-size bed. Then I get to move to the basement further away.
A different floor. That's big.
That is big. That's privacy. That's
independence.
Independence. Your parents are viewing you with a bit more responsibility.
Yeah.
Okay. Then what do we do? If you choose to go to college, you move out.
Move out into a shared cave.
Shared cave.
Small, dorm room. Modest.
We had a shared cave.
We had.
With Miguel.
And we were pissed about
from
Miguel.
From España.
We were all excited that it was going to be our cave.
Yeah, at first. But then we found out he was 21, so that worked out pretty well.
Yeah, but we threw his clothes out the window.
We did, on the sixth floor.
By we,
and then by we, you mean me.
Yes.
But he threw my pillows out, too. So we brought him over to holidays. Me and Miguel are good.
Sure.
So then you progress. Then you might get your own cave, your own dorm room. But then you're like, you know what? This is lame living on college campus. What do you do then?
Yeah, we got to get an apartment.
Let's
off campus.
Get an apartment. So that's what we did. We our off campus cave, which was amazing.
It was good.
Then what do? Then you find a cave woman or a cave man, depending on who you like to mate with.
A mate.
Dave found his mate. So then he moved. He left me solo caveman.
We took a half step where. We had an apartment, the floor above my, you know, cave mate and her friend.
That's so right.
Me and Zach lived in an apartment above Lauren and Barb.
That's right. So we had like a pretty cool cave system.
Man, that was awesome.
And now we live in the cave state, which is kind of weird. That's what Missouri is. So then after that, you move in with her. I move in by myself. I go back down to school, start the progression all over again, get my own apartment.
Right.
Then my cave woman moves in. Then we get married. So then what do? Then you get your first, what do we call it? Starter house.
Starter.
The starter cave.
It's a starter, right?
Oh, this is what a lovely starter house. Like these fucking labels we give to our progressions.
I love it.
Then you got to upgrade.
You have to.
Oh, so ours was definitely
this kitchen and bathroom and bedrooms. They're not good enough.
Everyone needs their own space nowadays. My kids, they need multiple rooms to themselves. Yeah.
How many square footage? What's your square footage?
Oh, beautiful. Full basement? Yeah. Full basement?
Yard? Yeah. How's this yard situation?
Oh, man. Garage? Mm-hmm. So then,
what year was this built?
But what's funny is we are upgrade. The house is a little bit bigger, but it wasn't a full upgrade because there's so much we have to fix up.
Location.
Which we have been. We moved for the kids' school to start their whole cave progression. So maybe one day they can skip the starter cave and buy a big fancy cave first. I don't know.
Yeah. And it's funny, too. We're in a town where there are, million-dollar plus, multi-million-dollar homes. And Zach and I live in the more modest part of town. And it's interesting. It's palpable. We know, or at least I'm conscientious of, that's the way, our kids will be judged at school,
Maybe. Maybe.
At least
when
somewhat.
We grew up in school, sure. But I don't know what the culture is with the kids nowadays. If they judge on that, maybe they judge on
well,
something.
Well, their parents will, at least.
Yeah, well, I could give a shit about that. I just don't want to be judged by the 10-year-olds.
Well, those 10-year-olds are brutal.
Let's go a little bit more classical here. Biblically, pride is one of the seven deadly sins. I mean, even if you're not a Christian thing, like hearing that, it's like, what? Like that's big. A lot of people have read that book and are influenced by that book. Mm-hmm. Dante Alighieri, maybe the most famous poet of all time, wrote The Divine Comedy. He says pride is the most deadly sin. It's the worst sin. You go to the deepest pits of hell, the deepest circles of hell for exhibiting too much pride.
I have a thought on that.
Yeah.
The worst punishment besides death that...
Death by bongo?
there's a joke we'll get into later. The worst punishment besides death that we read about in classic texts and everywhere is what?
Isolation.
Banishment.
Yeah.
Right? Excommunication.
Excommunication from a church. Solitary confinement in a prison.
What does hubristic pride promote? I said earlier, at least me, disconnection.
Yeah. Well, what I called tower building.
Yeah.
You put yourself in a tower and you become the king of your fiefdom.
So exactly what he said, right? It leads to the lowest, the worst hell, right? Disconnection from everyone else. And I feel like when you talked about the human condition, we talked about needing progress, but we also need connection. We thrive on it.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the things that, I mean,
it's one of our psychological needs that has to come before physiological needs oftentimes.
Yeah. Well, we're social animals.
Let's look at a modern guy now, though.
Okay.
Ryan Holiday.
Yes.
Who would probably consider himself a bit of a philosopher. He's our age, roughly mid-30s. A former PR titan and got out of public relations, former head of marketing for American Apparel at the age of 25, made millions of dollars, and then said, I'm done with that rat race for a variety of reasons. And now has written several excellent books.
Very good books.
The Daily Stoic, The Obstacle is the Way. And there's one other one I'm totally missing right now. And finally, the one we're looking at, Ego is the Enemy. So what did you take away from your reading of Ego is the Enemy?
It was pretty down on ego, a lot more than I thought it would be. It really promoted a lot of right side up thinking. It really promoted a lot of
putting others
before yourself, basically operating with others' interests in mind, taking care of others before yourself. And it's kind of shocking to read a book like that in today's society. I mean, I think it's got a lot of truth in it, and it's a very good book. I recommend everyone read it. But, I mean, for me, I found myself having, these negative emotions reading that book, being like, man, I really got to take myself down a few levels.
I think that's his point.
That is his point.
And I think that's why it's selling so well,
yeah.
Is that in this society where we do celebrate pride and achievement in the U.S., he's saying we point to these successful humans or companies or organizations, and yet there are probably 1,000 times as many people, companies, and organizations who could have been that successful but weren't able to be so because people at the top couldn't swallow their pride.
Yeah, absolutely.
He breaks the book up into three phases: aspire, right, what you want, your desire, success, and failure. And again, I'd highly recommend the read.
He does a very good job of giving situational examples in history where, something had happened that is a demonstration of, you know, that aspiration, that success, or that failure. And then he breaks it down and takes the lessons out of it. Very 48 Laws of Power-ish.
Oh, yeah. Well, his mentor was Robert Greene, right? The guy that wrote the 48 Laws of Power, Mastery, The Art of War, lots of different things.
Yeah. And in doing so, I think you can take those lessons and try to, you know, find parallels in your life and say, okay, you know, like, this is what I thought I was going to do. This is what I need to do moving forward. The one, you know, one of the major takeaways that I got from the book was it allowed me to really empathize and to really think about the people that I admire versus envy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's so crazy. I think that oftentimes when we are motivated by hubristic pride, we want others to envy us.
Oh, yeah. Compare. We compare and despair. We want to be compared to others and have them despair because of our success.
And I thought about the people who I feel that emotion towards, and I don't particularly like those people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so why would we want others to, quote unquote, envy us and not like us? That promotes that disconnection, that feeling of being judged. Nobody – that promotes negative emotions. On the opposite side of the spectrum, the people that I do admire the most tend to be the people who are more, who volunteer, who are, you know, less greedy. You know, I tend to admire those people. And if who do I want to be to others? I kept thinking about that to myself while reading that book.
That's good. I'm going to share two ideas that came out of this book. One is a quote that he put in here from actually Genghis Khan, one of the most strategic military leaders of all time and one of the most ruthless murderers of all time. Genghis Khan said, "If you can't swallow your pride, you can't lead." Tied to that, I think this is really interesting. Pride dulls your ability to learn, to build relationships, to change, and to remain flexible.
Yeah,
you put yourself in that tower with your principles and your truths, and you build it up high, and you're the king in that tower. And I saw that a lot when I was doing divorce mediations. I'm disagreeing with this dumb bitch or this a-hole because of principle. And it's like, well, that's fine, but you're cutting yourself off from a lot of other opportunities and things going on.
Yeah, it's pride, right?
Absolutely. Well, I wanted to say one other thing. Pride in terms of work, things we're producing or doing to earn money, to upgrade our cave, basically, or leave our kids with bigger cave options after we die. It's because we wrap our identity up into our work, or when we do that, we lose objectivity. We lose our ability to ask and seek feedback from others and make change based on that feedback. When our identity is too tightly wrapped and it's married to our work, that is problematic.
Well, and let me build on that. It also prevents us from exploiting new opportunities and new connections with other people because we have to stay in our comfort zone so as not to expose those vulnerabilities and so as not to risk trying to make a new connection or a deeper connection with others that may fail and expose some, you know, negativity in us that we have to work on. Our flaws.
I want to go back to the question I asked you. What do you take pride in work-wise and that you're not ashamed of? So you said family.
Well, I thought about
it. You said house.
Yeah, I thought about this because recently I've been feeling a little bit of insecurity, which can manifest itself in pride, which is a strange thing. And I kind of did a little bit of introspection as I was taking notes as to, well, why is that? And I think there's two reasons behind it. Number one, because I think that on the personality spectrum, I'm probably a bit of a specialist, and I take pride in competence in specialized skill sets.
Doing it right, precision.
Precision and skills that, you know, to get things done. And I mean some detail tasks, some technical tasks and things like that.
Right.
As I've progressed through my career and now I'm, you know, working on owning a business, I've had to step out of that and take a leadership role and take a generalist role and learn more about business generalities. And I feel that I am beginning to fall behind in some of that specialization. And I think that's generated a little bit of insecurity in me. But it's an amazing thing that I'm trying to deal with. And the other thing, so that was one, right? That's one thing that I think was generating a little bit of insecurity. The other thing that I think is generating a bit of insecurity is that I'm in new territory now. I, you know, as a leader of a business and trying to build this thing, I've never done this before. And and it's hard. I am in that struggle and I am recognizing how hard it is versus being in my comfort zone and feeling like I'm, you know, kicking ass and feeling really prideful. So if you were to ask me right now, I would say I'm taking pride in the fact that I'm getting out of my comfort zone and I'm trying to build a business rather than staying in a place where I'm comfortable and uber competent and, you know, being dominant. When I was at Ernst & Young, they try to pump up all their people. They say, we're all type A people here. You wouldn't be here if you weren't. And, you know, we're better than those people over there. And this is why. And that's why we do our work so good. And that's why you're the best at what you do and this and that. And it starts to sink in and you start to believe it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And then so I'm at the opposite now. You know, every day I have made partners with people running companies that are far more mature, that are just way down the road. And
the people or the companies?
Both.
Okay.
Both. And so I'm aspiring to be them and I'm trying to make the leaders of those companies my mentors and I'm trying to look at their companies and, you know, use those as guides of where I go, you know, putting my own spin on it. I don't want to become them. I want to be myself, but using those as a guide. And so that you want to talk about, it's hard to avoid the compare and despair when that is the world that you're in every day, or that's the world that I'm immersing myself in every day. Versus if I look at myself and what I'm doing versus, you know, many other people, I guess I could end up on that hubristic pride of the scale, side of the scale.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. How about you?
Well, I guess I'll start real quickly with where you started, but it is true. And sorry, Ben, you're too young at this point to, he's only, you know, 14 months old, but I definitely take pride in the actions and behaviors that my 4-year-old daughter exhibits. Now, I need to be honest. I would say it's, I don't know, 20% my doing, maybe an 80% my wife per se. But my little girl is amazing. She's self-confident. She can speak to adults like she's an adult. She has opinions of her own. She can defend her opinions. She is going to be a free thinker and an independent person. And it makes parenting very challenging at times. But I'm so happy if I've influenced her at all to be who she is at this point in her life. I am definitely taking pride in that. But I downplay that. I usually don't say I've helped, but I have. I give her boundaries. I give her structures. I give her that tough love. I try to give her problem-solving scenarios. I see the looks I get when I'm in public from people, and I don't fucking care. And so that for me is pride. And that could become a negative thing someday. I don't know. Business-wise, I take pride in helping people solve their problems. I take pride in caring about people, truly caring, and truly wanting them to solve their problem on their own, but by me maybe giving them a path, showing them a path that didn't exist, giving them some information. I take pride in connecting with people, helping other people get connected, because to me, when that happens, they discover new opportunities. They have the chance to grow. And even if they say, hey, look what I'm doing, my pride is, yeah, but I help put you in that direction. And I like that, for better or worse. I take a lot of pride in working with groups. So whether that's coaching someone, whether that's speaking, being in front of a group doing speaking engagements, I love that. I love taking all the knowledge that I've got up to this point from either formal schooling, some of my business opportunities, some of my zany stuff I've done and the trouble I've gotten into, and sharing that knowledge and translating it in a way to where it makes sense and resonates with people in their life. Not here's all the shit that happened to me, look at me, this is cool, but how can I translate Zach's life in a way that makes sense to you, that'll make your life be better. And when I can do that, and it doesn't happen all the time, I definitely feel the rush of happiness inside. Like, wow, you translated that knowledge in a way that's going to be useful to this person. So that's my pride.
Well, I can tell you that everything you said there makes total sense as a third-party observer, because I see that fueling you on a daily basis. Think about it. You, first and foremost, are a teacher, are a professor. Yeah. In the classroom setting and at SAUE. And secondly, you are a connector of people. I always use the hub and spoke analogy, yeah. And you are certainly a hub of people. And I can see you get that rush out of improving other people's experiences by trying to leverage your own knowledge. It's
a network.
And that's admirable, man. And a little bit... I mean, it's something to be envious of. I'll say that.
Well,
it's really great.
Again, I appreciate that, yeah. But I don't want people to be envious, because there's plenty of other things I'm envious of.
Sure.
I can't do technical tasks. I've created such a self-limiting belief in my head. When I'm coaching you or working with you and you're diving into these technical conversations, internally I'm like, man, you're an idiot, Zach. You could never.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like, I have sometimes just leave the room and get a coffee because it's just like, man, this dude is so much smarter than – it's crazy.
That
it's
is
weird.
Insane.
Oh, yeah.
I look at the way that you juggle the things that you juggle and remain focused on each one and moving each one forward. And I look at how I, you know, will have – 10 things going on, and oh man, 3 of those or 4 of those or 5 of those are really languishing because I'm having to put so much effort into these, you know, detailed technical ones and all this stuff. And man, I just wish I could move everything forward in the way that Zach moves everything forward. And seeing you speak in front of groups and everything and being like, oh, I used to do that much better than I do now. And that's become a fear of mine simply because of a lack of doing it lately. And we've had that conversation.
Yeah, but you're going to be diving into doing it.
But anyway, you get what I'm saying. Well, it's so cool that we look at each other and we feel...
those insecurities
that
we don't share, and we're closer than anybody could imagine. But we should probably share some of those vulnerabilities so that the other person can knock it off and be like, you're an idiot, stop thinking like that, you know. Move on.
We have a special relationship in that we can do that with each other.
Here's what I'll say for both of us though, and this ties back to the good pride. You should all take pride in your hard work, the things you learn, and then do something with that learning, and then the struggle that you all go through, whether it's parenting, spirituality, fitness and energy, business related or your income related, but find the way to take knowledge and turn it into action and take some pride in that. Take that good pride in that. It's not enough to read a really cool book about how to do something new for your life or your business or your family and not do anything. It's okay. If you don't read ever, fine, then take a little bit of pride in the fact that you read, but take a step and find that action. And so whether it's at my level of connecting and speaking and trying to be a problem solver, or Dave's level of developing that expert knowledge, that solving those very technical, complex problems that very few people can do, you should take pride in those things.
And I think that if you do that, if you turn knowledge into action, and you then see yourself as productive, then you fulfill the quote that Einstein talked about balance requiring forward motion. It's like life being like a bicycle. And that will help you generate authentic pride, and that will help you have socially desirable traits like agreeableness, conscientiousness, and emotional stability, because as you reflect upon yourself, you are seeing – hey, I woke up and that thing that I was doing at the beginning of the day is a little bit further. I made progress today, and I feel good about that. There's something that makes you, it's part of the human condition that fulfills something inside of us that then allows us to be authentic and connect with others and everything.
Good.
It's the opposite. If you want to feel the opposite, then procrastinate. Don't do anything for a while and feel like you're getting behind and you're failing on a goal. It's amazing how you'll feel insecurity and you'll feel disconnection and you'll feel shame.
And you'll feel physically bad.
Physically bad. It's
knots
crazy.
In the stomach, cold yeah. sweats, waking up at night, not being able to sleep.
Yeah. And that's, and then you will, you know, want to hide that. You won't want to be vulnerable and let other people realize how you feel inside, and that will then generate those hubristic tendencies that we talked about.
Well, you want to jump into some change challenges for people?
Yeah, I've got one.
Sure.
Be vulnerable. Mm. Have an uncomfortably honest conversation with a peer or a mentor. What Zach and I just did.
Yeah, that is wasn't scripted though.
That was unscripted. Do that with someone. And, you know, it's going to be tough because you may not have, or you may not feel that you have a relationship with someone where you can do that. And you don't know if it's going to be reciprocated. That's the toughest part. But go into it and just say, you know what? I want to develop that type of a relationship with this person. I want to develop that authentic pride. I want to develop this connection rather than disconnection. And so to do so, I'm going to make myself vulnerable at the risk of them not reciprocating. Because if they do reciprocate, you're going to find something that's really special that can help you move forward. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good change challenge. I thought about something crazy would be. And I don't say crazy, but something really challenging
comfort zone
would be to do that with a competitor.
Yep. Now, if you're going to take that route, make sure you're strategic.
Sure.
Reach out to Dave or me. We love having strategy sessions.
Yes.
But that you can learn the most there.
Yes.
I just was reading about Jack Welch yesterday. He said you always have to be learning at all times. That's what he did at GE. And you can often learn the most from your competitors, but you've got to do so strategically. Either way, great point. Usually I give you change challenges, listeners, that is about communicating, establishing relationships, connecting, doing something with other people. Today it's all internal work, and it's two things. First, I want you to do some demolition work. I want you to think about where your identity is wrapped too tightly to something that you've done or achieved or are trying to achieve. Where have you built your tower out of principles or whatever, and made yourself the king or queen of the tower, and demo it, tear it down, even if it's just for a day, because you can always build it back up. And but that actually then ties into Dave's change challenge of vulnerability. In order to do that, you probably have to be vulnerable, and maybe it does still lead to a conversation with somebody.
I would think that tower would be built on a bunch of insecurities and self-limiting beliefs.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Because if it were authentic, you wouldn't be in that tower. You would be amongst others, you know, sharing.
You'd be walking with the what do you call them? The people you rule if you're a king or queen. I'm trying to think of Game of Thrones right now. What do you call
the peasants, I guess?
Peasants and just...
Or you would be amongst the...
your people.
Yeah, or you would be like... What did they say in the Bible when Jesus would walk among... Like, he would be with the tax collector. He had to eat dinner with the tax collector.
Yeah, most people's enemies.
And with the prostitutes, you know, where no one else would do that.
Dude. Yeah. So tear your tower down mentally first, and then maybe have a conversation about it with somebody second. Second is the Larry David. Think about the next time you offer a tour of your cave, your house, or you're offered one somewhere else. Obviously, be gracious and accept, because it's just a jerk move to not. Pay attention to the thoughts and feelings you have while you're giving one or you're taking one, and do some reflective work on that. And what is that saying about you? Why are those things there? Are you comparing? Is there positive emotion where you're truly happy for someone? Is it fake emotion? And then what you're really trying to do is find flaws or figure out where you're better, your cave's better or not. And just do some self-analysis.
Yeah, there's so much that I could dive in there. All these thoughts hit me real quick. We're running out of time. But
no, go ahead.
I would say as you're going, the cave as an attribute that other people judge you by, as you're trying to build up that cave that, and you're trying to build up that attribute, ask yourself the question, am I doing this for internal purposes? Am I doing this because I want to, you know, have a better place to host connecting gatherings? Am I doing this because I'm going to, me and my family are going to enjoy the use of this space more? Or are you doing this, be honest with yourself, because you're very excited to invite people over and show off what you have or what you have done. And I'm sure it can be a little of both, but it's going to be a sliding spectrum.
Or
just examine your motivations.
Yeah, your motives, your desires. Or your drivers. Which will be multifaceted. There's multiple reasons.
Yes.
I think what's even worse than that is, am I doing this just because I think it's what's expected of me? And I have no thought as to why. Well, why? Well, this is just what you do at this point.
Right.
In my life.
Yeah, I think both of those can be negative.
Yeah.
It's funny. You know, a lot of people will be like, oh, yeah, we're doing this because we want this to be a really great gathering space. Mm-hmm. We want to have people over to share in this and really enjoy it, you know. It can turn into this thing that's a disconnector because other people are like, wow, God, they got a huge house.
The way you share it
right,
is off-putting.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's such an interesting
nice.
Before we end the episode, too, I want to talk about my daughter, Marin.
Yeah.
When you asked the question, I thought I'd have to go back and listen, but I thought you asked it with a business tilt to it. And that I didn't mention Marin at all. Everything that you said about Claudia, two things. Number one, we just had Claudia stay the night before last.
Thank you again.
Yes. It was awesome. It was wonderful. And I will say, you know, everything that you said about Claudia, I agree with. I think.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I think she's amazing. She's very mature for her age. She's a joy to be around, and yeah, she's welcome to stay whenever. That said, the amount of pride that you feel in her, I feel the same in Marin.
And see that.
Yeah, and I, you know, I'm really external about the way that I feel the pride with Marin, but I do, man. I soak it up when other people in public. Oh, she's so cute. She's so, mm-hmm. you know, she's so smart. She says some witty things.
Yeah, she does.
And I just, man, nothing makes me feel better.
And she's got that same independent streak that Claudia does, which is so awesome and terrible at the same time when you're trying to parent, right?
It is.
But she, man, she is smart. Like they could, I can just see them as leaders. So I've introduced the idea of leader and leadership and what that means to Claudia lately. Because she's at school now. And I want her to be a leader in whatever she does. And Marin is the same way. Like, I could see them starting their own little mini school and being the leaders for all their friends and kids.
Absolutely. It's so crazy how they are little people that develop these traits that they are just – Marin is just – she just was independent. You know, I think Lauren's side of the family has that. And I think there are certain things that – are just innate in kids, and I just look at her with such wonder and awe. And yes, I try to foster it. I do take pride in whatever role I can play in it. But my God, I don't know what it is about being a father and feeling that just fulfillment and pride on a level that is just beyond anything I've experienced to this point. Anyway,
well, what I'd say. Lastly, and it's an opposite of pride, is when I'm coming down a little maybe too structured or sharp or whatever you want to call it, tough love with Claudia, I'll literally think, what would Dave say in this situation?
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah, like, because you're more compassionate. Me and Lauren are more similar in terms of the providing structure and rules. You and Kizzy are way more similar in terms of showing the true caring and compassion, right?
Would
you say that that's accurate? We've talked about this.
Yeah, I think it could be accurate. I think... Two interesting things. This is just an anecdotal story. When Claudia was over, Lauren, I think, asked, you know, did the thing that a lot of adults do and said something to Claudia like, well, what do you want to be, you know, when you get older? And I said to Lauren, well, she's going to change the world, babe. Because Zach talks to her every day and says, who's going to change the world? And it's going to be her. So I'm like, so I'm pretty sure she's going to change the world in whatever it is that she decides to do. And you could see Claudia... just like recognize that, just like, yep, that's true, as if it's just a given. And so I thought that was awesome, and I wanted to share that.
Yeah.
On the flip side, two things that I try to do is I do try to put in rules and boundaries for Marin, but I worry when I'm doing it that I'm somehow stifling her or putting fears into her. Mm. You know, there's that song Mother by Pink Floyd. Yeah. You know, Mama's going to put all of her fears into you. Yeah. I worry about that because I don't want to put fear into her. I want her to be, you know, fearless. And
we can do a whole other episode.
Of course. And we can. The other thing is I never want to say because I said so.
Oh, yeah. No.
I always want to explain to her why so that she can generate an understanding of the world around her and really fulfill her independence in a fully informed manner. So
as you can see, we have a lot of pride in our kids. I'm glad we ended there because that's why we started this. We started this for our kids so they can hear some of our thoughts regardless of how goofy or unformed they are. But we're also now taking pride in Life Lab, and we're hoping that you're picking up what we're putting down and taking away a few nuggets of knowledge.
Absolutely. We do this. I mean, it's hard work, you know, putting this together, being consistent with it, and not seeing any what's the reward that
there's
we get
zero,
out of this,
like return, yeah, if you will, other than the joy we get when we're doing it.
Yes.
But the struggle is, okay, when are we doing it? Okay, let's get it on our calendar. You know, we record these oftentimes at 6:30 a.m. on Sunday mornings. Yes. In my office at my house.
Yes.
But it's a commitment. And yeah. But we've done it, so high five. We're going to keep doing it, and we hope you like it.
Yeah.
So you want to close us out?
Yeah. I mean, hopefully this is an example of a positive thing to be proud of, an achievement or something that that you're happy about, that you've internalized, that generates feelings of connection, that is authentic pride, not hubristic pride.
So as always, experiment with life.